We always get great arguments, by the way, from Montana lawyers, so I'm looking forward to this.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Jason Holden, and I represent the defendant appellant, David James Matthew. Good morning. The heart of Mr. Matthew's appeal focuses on the definition of his quote-unquote premises in an anticipatory search warrant and the conditions of that anticipatory search warrant not being satisfied prior to its execution. The search warrant in this case, issued by a state district court judge in Billings, essentially did four things. One, it defined Mr. Matthew's residence to include his screened front patio. And on page seven of our brief, we have a picture of that house for the court. The search warrant also did three additional things. It required delivery of the package to Mr. Matthew while he occupied his premises or his home. Second, it required that he accept the package at his residence, and then it required that he re-enter his home. Here, Agent Waldo's entry into the screened front patio without any of the conditions of the search warrant first being satisfied violated the Fourth Amendment. Agent Waldo entered into Mr. Matthew's residence without a warrant. He did so with the express intent to satisfy the conditions of a warrant.
Now, so in your view, what he had to do when he walked up the steps to the house, and I have a picture of the house right here.
Yes, Your Honor.
He should have knocked on the screen door. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly what Florida v. Jardine says. As Justice Scalia said in that case, the license that any police officer has stops at the front door.
Well, listen, now, you said one thing I couldn't tell by looking at the photograph of the house, and although in the papers it refers to it as a screen porch or a screen patio.
Yes.
Is that correct? It was a screen, not glass or not...
Well, this is Hardin, Montana, and this home is constructed in the 1920s style. It is a screened-in front patio. It is the exterior of the home.
It's the exterior of the home, or is it the front of the home?
It's the front of the home. It's the exterior of the home. If you look at that picture, there's the mailbox.
Yes.
There's a lock on the screen door. There's a number on the bottom of the screen door. The steps lead up to it.
But it looks like a porch. You enter the porch, and the front door to the inside of the premises is the inside door.
I disagree, Judge. That home itself, I mean, if that's the case, you'd have the mailbox on the interior door. The interior door actually is the door to Mr. Matthew's living room. And you don't have a license to walk into that interior enclosed screened front patio to deliver.
Well, if you look, that's what I asked about. You know, if you walk up to the door and you look in through the screen and you see abandoned packages, if you were delivering a package, you most likely, just common sense, you would open up the screen door if it was unlocked and walk in, knock on the door. Nobody was there. You'd either leave the package. I mean, if you're just a regular postman or a neighbor down, I'm not talking about the instructions here, but I mean, just...
Well, I sort of disagree with that.
If you look in, you see a lot of empty boxes, correct? You see a lot of empty packages.
You see a table. You see someone's home. You see someone...
Empty packages in the patio, correct?
There are empty boxes, yes, Your Honor.
You see them. I mean, there's photos in the record.
Yes.
And you see all these empty packages and boxes and whatnot.
Why would that allow...
You know, just think of it. If you're a private person, a private citizen, and you're going to deliver a package, and you knock on the door, the screen door, it's just, you know... And
well, you would first knock.
You'd knock.
That didn't happen.
Give you that knock. But you look in. Nobody's there. You see these empty packages. You open the door.
Maybe.
You go to the front door and knock. Right?
I'm not sure that I agree, Your Honor.
Why not?
I would not enter.
So if you were a private citizen, give me your version of how this would all unfold.
I would knock on the screen door, wait for an answer, and if they didn't answer, I would leave the package on the front door.
I mean, but isn't that the problem here, that reasonable minds are going to differ on whether you're invited to that front door or not, the actual front door of the house? Send 20 kids trick-or-treating, half of them might go through the screen door to get to the front door. The other half might not want to go through the screen door. And so why should the police be penalized with the exclusionary rule when reasonable minds would differ whether they're being whether there is an invitation to get to the front door?
I don't think that it's necessarily that reasonable minds differ in terms of whether or not they would go into the interior door or stay on the exterior door. I think the question is, under Jardines, where that license ends. But more importantly than that, even if we look at the conditions of the warrant itself, it's still required and defined that the screened front patio was Mr. Matthews' residence. And a conditional warrant or an anticipatory warrant is defined in Grubbs as requiring a condition precedent to occur before the warrant can be executed. And you have to anticipate that a certain condition will be in place. Here, the package must be delivered at his residence. Here you have an officer who didn't knock, but let's assume that he had a license to walk into the screened front patio. He is now in an enclosed screened front patio, which is defined by the warrant, to satisfy the warrant. And that he cannot do. And that's why the conditions of the warrant were not satisfied. The delivery must occur while Mr. Matthews occupies his home. He must have the opportunity to accept delivery, and then he must...
So he did come out of the house, correct? Or he came to the door?
Well, he answered the interior door, which was his living room. Agent Waldo said, "Are you David?" Remember that the package only had one name on it,
yes,
not a last name. He said, "No, I'm not." And Agent Waldo said, "Is this your address?" He showed him the package with the address. And then he stepped from the living room into the enclosed front patio. And that is where Agent Waldo delivered the package, and that is where the package was found when the warrant was executed, Your Honor.
Didn't he deliver it to him at his premises?
But Agent Waldo was in his premises. So, there's a lot of discussion about a hyper-technical reading of the warrant, but what you have here is you have an agent entering a home to satisfy the conditions of a warrant. And that is what is unconstitutional here. And to the extent it isn't unconstitutional, it certainly doesn't satisfy the conditions of the warrant itself. Because you have the agent walking into the home to accomplish delivery. And under Grubbs, that condition precedent is not satisfied. So it is somewhat circular.
But the whole purpose of the anticipatory requirements, of the preconditions, was to make sure that he was at the premises when he received the package.
No, I disagree. What Grubbs is about, Your Honor, is that
I'm talking about this warrant.
No, this warrant is not just occupying the residence. It is delivery and acceptance. Remember that this is a warrant.
And reentering. Wasn't there something about reentering the premises?
Yes, Your Honor. So the package is the probable cause. The marijuana is the probable cause. Remember, this isn't a drug case. This is an eventual search that discovers a gun. It's a felon in possession. So the marijuana is the probable cause that allows them to enter. It is the fact that the delivery of the package must go in or be at the home. And here you have an officer entering the home to accomplish delivery. And that is not in compliance with the conditions of the warrant itself.
Mr. Holden, did you want to hold some time for rebuttal?
I will hold 47 seconds, Your Honor.
Well, we'll give you a little more than that if you need.
Thank you, Your Honor. Tim Tatarka on behalf of the United States.
Stacy, could you plan when Mr. Holden returns to give him 2 minutes for a rebuttal, and we'll give Mr. Tatarka an extra minute if he needs it to.
Thank you, Your Honor. As the Supreme Court said in Florida versus Jardine, there's no question that an individual's front porch area is an individual has a reasonable expectation of privacy in that area, and it's considered part of the home for the Fourth Amendment. However, as the Supreme Court noted, any member of the public has an implied license to approach that front porch area for the purpose of knocking on that front door and engaging in the resident in conversation. Not only do we know from the record here that Mr. Waldo's purpose in entering that area was to knock on the front door and speak to Mr. Matthew.
Why wasn't the outer door the front door?
The front door.
Why wasn't the outer screen door the front door?
Oh, it's indisputed in the record. There's nothing in the record to indicate that the front door or that the screen door was the front door.
Had a lock on it.
It had a latch.
But it wasn't latched on this particular day.
Yes. And it's also undisputed in the record, at excerpts of record page 75, that Agent Waldo said if it had been latched, he would have stopped there. However, if he would have knocked, Mr. Matthews would not have heard him. I would point out this search occurred in March, first part of March in Montana, which is still very much winter in Montana. There was no reason to believe that the inner door would be open or any windows would be open such that you would knock on that door and stop there. Importantly, not only do we know that Agent Waldo entered for the purpose of knocking on that front door, but we also know that Mr. Matthews received him as a licensee. When Agent Waldo knocked on the door, Mr. Matthews answered, engaged him in conversation, eventually accepted the package, shook Agent Waldo's hand and saw him to the door. That's entirely consistent with treating someone as a licensee approaching their front door, which any member of the public would. There was no indication to the contrary. Mr. Matthew didn't say, "What are you doing on my front porch?" or even, "Let's continue this conversation out on the front steps." There was no indication in the record that it was unreasonable for Agent Matthew or Agent Waldo to consider the front door to be the front door of the residence and to enter under a license. As Your Honor noted, it is hard to imagine that any trick-or-treater or door-to-door salesman would stop at a screen door in Montana in the winter and knock on that door and wait to be answered. And there's certainly nothing in the record in this case to indicate that it wasn't the custom and practice of the community to enter to the front door to knock on it and get Mr. Matthew's attention. At that point, Mr. Matthew then accepted the package containing the drugs and then placed that package on the, as Your Honor noted, in that screen front porch area that contained numerous other opened and unopened packages.
Then he re-entered the house.
And then re-entered the house.
Would it be common in this part of Montana in this time of the year to sort of look at this porch as a place of shelter for somebody who's going to, for a visitor who may be approaching the house? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. I think that's a fair way to put it. There certainly isn't anything that would indicate that an individual would be expected to wait outside that front door. There's no sign that says no admittance beyond this point or even no soliciting or anything like that. And importantly, as I noted, it's relevant to look at Agent Waldo's intentions. It's also relevant to look at how Mr. Matthew treated Agent Waldo, again, entirely consistent with there being a license to enter up to that front porch. I would note I would recommend the court's attention particularly to footnote 4 of Jardine, which points out that the fact that Agent Waldo was entering for the purpose of knocking and talking is what matters with respect to the license. It doesn't matter that he had an investigatory purpose in the conversation once he got Mr. Matthews' attention. Unless the court has any further questions.
Are you going to address the conditions of supervision, that issue?
The United States acknowledges that the district court didn't make a finding with respect to whether or not Mr. Matthew had completed his term of his sex offender treatment, and that while there was no, it wasn't unreasonable, what happened at the district court wasn't unreasonable. The fact is that finding wasn't made, and the United States acknowledges that
no findings were made. And I mean, coming from, I'm a trial judge.
Sure.
Coming from state court, there has to be a reasonable relationship between the conditions and the crime. It's not true in federal court, but some findings have to be made as to why those conditions should be required. Here, there was nothing on the record, the PSR, other than the mere fact of conviction. We have this knee-jerk reaction in every case where there's a sex offense, no matter how old, we're going to reimpose these sex offender conditions based on the conviction alone. So why should we remand back when there was no evidence that these were necessary conditions?
I believe what happened at the district court...
They told the defendant to go disprove our ruling. Isn't that what they ultimately did? Come back and tell us why we shouldn't do what we did without any findings on the record whatsoever.
Well, what happened was the PSR indicated that he hadn't completed his sex offender treatment. Mr. Matthew raised for the first time at the sentencing that he had in fact completed his sex offender treatment. The United States acknowledges that what should have happened at that point, the United States should have asked for a continuance to determine whether or not he had in fact completed that sex offender treatment. Instead, what the court did, reasonably enough, since he had indicated that he had certificates showing that he had completed it, the district court said, if you provide those certificates, we'll modify the sentence. I don't think that was unreasonable, but I do think it was incorrect. The district court did need to make a finding, and what should have happened is it should have been continued to find out the answer to that factual question. And that's why the United States acknowledges that there should be a remand to make those actual factual findings, whether or not he completed that sex offender treatment.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I don't think I necessarily have the credibility to say that I wouldn't have ignored the front door and entered and knocked on the interior door. What I think we have, however, is Agent Waldo admitting at the hearing that he knew that Mr. Matthew had an expectation of privacy in that screened front patio. And in fact, Agent Waldo testified to the following effect. He would have an expectation of privacy in there. It was under the roof of his home. I would consider it to be part of the residence. It was within the residence.
Well, if you want to talk about expectation of privacy, that's what I asked. If you look in, all you have to do is just look through the door and you can see everything that's in the patio. What kind of expectation of privacy is that?
The question is, where does the license end? And when you look at those photos, Your Honor, it doesn't allow a license to enter into the patio and knock on the interior door. And even if it did, that doesn't satisfy the conditions of the warrant, because the warrant required acceptance, delivery, acceptance, and reentry. And you can't do that by entering within the residence. That's why that admission is so critical. It isn't so much that Mr. Matthews did not complete sex offender treatment. That was in response to the district court judge going to impose the condition. And Mr. Matthews said, I already did that in California. I discharged parole. There are no facts that allow the imposition of the sex offender requirements here. And we agreed to remand in our briefing, but we stand firm on our original argument.
So when the PSR came out, did you file an objection to the probation officer's recommendation?
So what happened here, Judge, is I was appointed. His trial lawyer was discharged after the PSR came out and the sentencing memo and all of that came out, and then I was appointed. And when I came in to finish up the sentencing, that is when I made the objection at the sentencing hearing.
At the sentencing hearing.
I did. And it was a function of me being appointed after all of that had been completed. So it wasn't entirely perfect timing, but I did lodge the objection at sentencing.
Okay.
Thank you, and I appreciate.
Do you agree that there should
time.
Be a remand on the sentencing?
At least on that particular
okay.
topic, Your Honor.
Yeah, I think we understand that. I want to thank both Mr. Holden and Mr. Tatarka for their excellent arguments, and thank them again for traveling a long way to see us.
Yes, it's good to see the court. We appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, United States versus Matthew shall be submitted.